Seconds, free minds, free people. This is a production of the Commonwealth Foundation for Public Policy Alternatives. The Box. Inside. Outside. On.
Thanks for joining us today. I'm Nate Benefield. I'm the Director of Policy Analysis with the Commonwealth Foundation in Harrisburg. Today, I'm joined with Matt Rose-Zhu, who is an economics professor at Susquehanna University in Selins Grove. Today, we're going to be talking about labor policy. Matt received his doctorate in economics from Iowa State University and has published op-eds on a number of economic issues in the Patriot News, the Philadelphia Inquirer, and in national publications, including Forbes and U.S. News & World Report. Thanks for joining us today, Matt.
Thanks for having me. Excited to be here.
Starting off, just kind of, I know you've had a number of op-eds recently in papers across Pennsylvania on labor issues. How would you basically describe Pennsylvania's business climate compared to the rest of the nation, and how does it impact us?
I don't know how we would rank. I know there are some places that do the rankings type thing, and I certainly don't know where we would fall on that or what criteria. There are certainly some things we could do better, one of them being the corporate income tax rate is quite high in Pennsylvania relative to many other states, which if you're a company that's looking to locate in Pennsylvania or somewhere where there's a lower tax rate, naturally the lower tax rate state might be more appealing if everything else is equal. Lack of right-to-work laws might influence some companies not to come here.
What is right-to-work? And, you know, if Pennsylvania enacted right-to-work, what would be the impact on our economy?
Right-to-work is the ability for a worker to have the right to work for an organization, even if he or she does not wish to be part of the union. And I know Pennsylvania has some sort of a rule where you can technically not be part of a union and be part of the workplace, but you still have to pay the fees, which doesn't really get you out of the benefits of you're paying for something you may not wish to do for the right to work. The impact if a right to work were passed, which Pennsylvania is not a right to work state, you would have some individuals who would choose not to be part of a union, right? There are a lot of individuals who are essentially forced into being in a union to work in the industry they want to work in, or perhaps there's a firm that's nearby that fits what they want to do, and it happens to be unionized. They're forced to do that. If they weren't in that, there's a couple economic effects. One would be very uncontroversial for anybody on the left or the right. A non-trivial amount of union dues goes out of the state of Pennsylvania. For example, there was an article in the past few days, at least in our local paper in this area, the Daily Item, about how teacher union dues money was used to hire speakers for the big teaching conference, out-of-state speakers. I think the captain from the 1980 Miracle on Ice team, he was hired for $20,000. They didn't say the price, but their usual fee is $20,000. Well, that's $20,000 that isn't going to go to businesses in the state of Pennsylvania. And whether you believe in unions or don't believe in unions, that would be very uncontroversial among any economist, right? The money goes out of the state. That hurts our state economy. The other benefit of that is it's more of an economic freedom argument. If unions spend money in the state, in theory, right, that's stimulating the state economy. But there's the question of, who knows how to spend the money better for a person, the union or the person themselves, if somebody doesn't wish for to be in that particular union. So while the, you know, I guess gross domestic product measures all spending the same, one of the assumptions in economics is that all of the spending is the same, but is union spending for somebody who doesn't wish to be a part of a union really have the same impact as spending from the individual? I would argue it doesn't, and there's a freedom component. There's other reasons beyond the very not controversial reasons you could get into a little bit more arguments on, but those who support economic freedom, there's huge benefits into having Pennsylvania be a right-to-work state.
Yeah. Now, some of the critics of right-to-work say that, well, if you pass right-to-work, you're basically busting up the unions, and then you have lower wages and are getting rid of the middle class. Since, you know, half the states are right-to-work states, you know, how much truth is there to that?
If you look at a study done by a left-wing think tank, you might find that result. But those studies, admittedly, from either side, are going to be very difficult to do because there's hundreds and hundreds of factors that would affect the wages in any particular state. From my view of the literature, there's no evidence that's happened at all. There's no evidence of any negative impacts. And if there's no negative impacts at all, that should be the minimum you don't need any more than that because you have more economic freedom. you should have the boost to the economy from the fact that more businesses might want to come to Pennsylvania in the first place, which should increase wages. Plus, union dues aren't trivial for people. I mean, sometimes union dues for, I have a friend who is a teacher, off the top of his head, he thought it was $500 a year. That's $500 that he's not spending elsewhere. Some of it might have gone out of the state of Pennsylvania, but a lot of it probably would have been to take his family out to an extra dinner a month or something, you know, other ways that it would help the economy for the state.
Move on and talk about union dues, allowing workers to keep their money. How would that help stimulate the economy?
Yeah, and it's the similar argument as perhaps going back and rerouting to the previous question just a moment. I do like the argument that if somebody wishes to be in a union, that's fine, but unions have to offer a good enough product where somebody wishes to be a part of it. If you have a union and nobody wants to be a part of it, right, like the competitive marketplace, if I tried to sell a product and nobody wants to buy it, I'll go out of business. If a union wished to do that, you would think they should go out of business as well. In a way, it would help in the competitive aspect. Only the unions who really provide services for their members should stay around. But the freedom to keep, you know, have individuals keeping their money, one, because they keep their money, it's not flowing out of state, right? A lot of money is paid on political campaigns, right? The unions, as we know, fund national campaigns all the time. I believe it was the Commonwealth Foundation that just had the story on some of it was going to the Scott Walker recall campaign, right? Yeah, I mean,
Wisconsin, yeah.
It's very not controversial among any economists. That money will have no effect on the Pennsylvania economy. That's money that helps the Wisconsin economy, helps political consultants, helps the TV stations there, but it's not going to help out our economy at all. By not having these forced union dues, right, the individuals keep their money, spend that money. A lot of that money would likely be spent in the state, would help improve Pennsylvania's economy.
You know, even in right-to-work states, you have unions, and they are getting it, you know, voluntarily so that they at least are maybe even more productive, and they have to demonstrate their value before they get any funding.
Yeah, and you would expect in right-to-work states that the unions are more productive because they have to offer a good product in order to get the workers, which is exactly what we'd want. I want the unions to do things well for their workers. We want them to provide a good product. And they're not gone, right? I mean, these right-to-work states still have unions. They wouldn't disappear. Certainly the enrollment would be a lot lower, as there are people who are forced to buy a product right now they don't wish to buy. But most of us would argue it's not a bad thing to allow people the freedom to not purchase a product they don't want to purchase.
I want to move on to another somewhat related labor issue, but it's been a hot topic in Harrisburg lately, has been on prevailing wage mandate. Can you expand a little bit what the state's prevailing wage law is, and how does it impact taxpayers and public works projects?
Yeah, absolutely. So the prevailing wage laws for certain contracts done by government entities that are over, I believe the limit is $25,000 now, you must pay what's called a prevailing wage, which for an economist, that's a very strange term to use, because if I hear the prevailing wage, I think that is whatever wage the market says somebody would do a job for. But that's not what's meant by the law. The law is saying it's essentially must pay a higher inflated union wage for a lot of these particular tasks. I would argue whether you are on the left or the right, this is a horrendously bad law for government. I'll use an example where I'm from, Selins Grove, Pennsylvania. The school district in Selins Grove built a new school building recently. I don't recall the exact cost, but I mean, millions and millions of dollars. Well, if the prevailing wage means the cost is 10% higher, that's an extra few million dollars in the bond issue that our school district and our taxpayers are paying back. Depending which side of the political spectrum you're in, you could have different views on what you think should be done with this, right? If you're on the right, you would probably say, well, instead of that $3 million, we could give taxpayers don't have to pay that amount of money. We'll have tax cuts, or you've been in a time where property taxes have had to increase. Maybe we don't have to increase property taxes, so it'd be lower in taxes. If you're on the left, you should still love the repeal of the prevailing wage, because what you would probably say if you're from the left is, wow, that's a lot of extra money we can use to hire more teachers.
Yeah.
In our district here, right, our teachers have had layoffs or furloughs. I mean, teachers have been let go. If you buy into the argument that more teachers means better education, you should be excited about ending the prevailing wages. This will give school districts the opportunity to spend more money. Now, that's a debate we should have, right? That's a left versus right debate. What's the right number of teachers in our school? I think that's a good debate to have, and there will be differences of opinion. But it'd be wonderful to have that debate, right? If we got rid of the prevailing wage, school districts would save a lot of money on these projects. That money could either go back to taxpayers or be used for other things that would be viewed as productive to society.
Yeah, that's what's interesting on prevailing wage is that you don't just hear, you know, economists and even taxpayer groups supporting, but you also even see the local governments, boroughs, school boards clamoring for reform because they would like the flexibility to be able to spend that money elsewhere within, you know, local government.
Yeah, a lot of the local school boards realize this, right? The tight times force penny pinching and force you to take a real hard look at the budget. And in a ways, that's a good thing, right? I mean, we do want our school boards to be as diligent as possible, as good of stewards as possible with our money. And this is one of the things they've realized, that these prevailing wage laws, in their view, means they are furloughing more teachers.
Moving on to one other issue I want to talk about on labor issues. And you've heard this talk lately about raising the minimum wage, and there's been a push at the federal level, but also here at the state level. Currently, our state minimum wage is the same as the federal rate. There have been at times when it was higher, and there's been a push to raise that. And a lot of people think if you raise the minimum wage, you're going to help workers because they're going to be paid more. But a lot of economists counter the opposite, that raising the minimum wage is going to hurt workers, especially low-skilled workers. Can you explain this? What's the downside of...
You are absolutely right of what most economic research says, right? There have been dozens upon dozens of studies, the vast majority of them would show if you do increase the minimum wage, you will have more unemployment among the selected groups, along with all of the side effects that go into that. So the reason for this could be pretty simple. Suppose, I'll use myself for example. I started out at a fast food job when I was 14 years old, because that was the legal minimum age, and I don't think it's that way anymore, at least in this state. And I made $3.90 an hour. And I think when I was 14 years old, I probably wasn't worth much more than $3.90 an hour. Maybe I was worth $4.50 an hour to the firm. So if I'm worth $4.50 to the firm and they can hire me for $3.90 an hour, they're happy. They get a little bit of benefit out of hiring me. I'm happy as I have a job. Everybody was happy with this particular arrangement. If the minimum wage back when I was trying to work was raised to $5 an hour, which actually during my adolescent and like teenage working years, it was in fact raised to $5 an hour. Thankfully for me, it wasn't at that initial point in time, or I don't think I would have had my first job. It wouldn't have been worth it for the firm to hire me. I would not have been worth $5 an hour to the firm. The firm would have chosen to try to get by on less labor because I wasn't worth it, or maybe they would have looked for somebody else to hire who they had to pay $5 an hour to, who maybe was a 17-year-old who's worth $5 an hour instead of somebody who's younger or a 20-year-old. You have unemployment from this because in a competitive marketplace, workers have lots of options. If a worker has enough skills where he or she is worth some amount of money to a firm, they should be able to obtain that amount of money, right? If you have a worker who is worth $10 an hour to a firm, in this area, there are all sorts. I mean, we're in a rural area in Seelands Grove. Now, there's a nice little market area close by where there's a number of shops, but there's dozens of places that could use a really high-quality worker and probably pay $10 an hour for somebody who's worth that amount. But if you're not worth that amount, you know, the firm won't want to pay that much. These higher minimum wages forces people out of work, younger people out of work. And you wouldn't expect it to affect somebody like me, a professor, or college graduates, because they have enough education where they're not going to bump into this minimum wage. So one way to check, does the minimum wage really matter, is to look at the unemployment rate among demographic groups. Mm-hmm. If you look across age groups, people 25 years and older, the unemployment rate is from maybe 5.5% to 7%, depending what age group you're looking at. If you look at teenagers, it's over 20%.
Wow.
And if you look actually at, for 2012, if you look at African-American teenagers, it's almost 40%. Right, where you have inner city schools that aren't doing the jobs they perhaps should do, so you have teenagers with lower skill sets, unfortunately. The $7.25 an hour minimum wage means it's not worth it for a firm to hire this person.
Well, that's the official unemployment rate, so it's actually the people who are... We're looking for work and not finding jobs?
Correct. So that does not count those who realize that they have a lot. I mean, so you'd have a lot of teenagers who know that all their friends are looking for work and not finding it and don't even attempt to. Those people aren't counted. This is just those. This is the official unemployment rate. In 2012, it was over 20% for all teenagers. It was almost 40% for African-American teenagers. And this it's not just that amount of money for the initial job. I mean, if you think about the repercussions on this, it's skills training, right? That first job teaches you how to show up for work. It teaches you how to deal with coworkers who sometimes aren't very fun to deal with, right? Or sometimes they aren't fun most of the time, but they'll have bad days, and you have to learn how to deal with that. And customers sometimes you have to learn to deal with. And you know, when I had minimum wage, the simple fact is there are days you wake up and you don't want to go to work. But you have a job, and you're supposed to work that day, and you show up. It sounds so simple, but that's a skill. And it, you know, if you do that at a minimum wage job, you gain these skills, and then other firms will see you as more valuable and give you a higher wage the second time. By not getting people in these entry-level positions, not only are we harming people now, we're really setting up the future to be much worse in the sense that they won't have the skills for the next job and the job down the line and so on.
Summing up, is a lot of what happens in politics is we enact policies based on what sounds good, not realizing what the unintended consequences are, and having a good understanding of economics is critical to that.
You could sympathize with this, and the minimum wage is one where public opinion, unfortunately, still is in favor of minimum wage increases generally. Sounds right. Somebody can't raise a family on the minimum wage, and you know that's the kind of the standard line, and more or less I'd probably agree with that. If you're going to deal with the percentage of people who are raising a family on the minimum wage, first of all, it's a tiny percentage of those on minimum wage. I'm not a huge government aid type of person. I'm a little bit more libertarian in my perspective. But if you're going to do something, the minimum wage is the wrong thing to do. Better to almost give tax credits or, you know, negative income tax, or simply give people almost like welfare. But if you're working, give them money. I mean, you could argue that's a bad policy, but that's better than a minimum wage that would put somebody out of work.
Well, Matt, thanks for your time today. It's been a great pleasure. I hope we can discuss in the future other policy issues. And you have a blog, too, if anyone wants to promote that, and people can go to find out see more of your writing and work.
If you typed in my name, Matthew Rozu, it would take you there. Otherwise, it's at paeconomist.blogspot.com. Just try to write on various issues on the state, local, state, national economy, anything that sounds fun to discuss. But it's pretty fun.
Thanks, and you can find more of any of these topics on our website at commonwealthfoundation.org. Thanks for joining us.